aos nossos trabalhos. Nós faremos esta reunião com tradução simultânea e por isso começo por dar as boas-vindas ao Sr. Embaixador da Irlanda em Portugal para connosco partilhar as prioridades da presidência irlandesa e podemos ter aqui uma discussão política sobre aquilo que vão ser os próximos 6 meses de futuro na União Europeia, dando-lhe desde já assim a palavra ao Sr. Embaixador e desejando mais uma vez boas-vindas à nossa Comissão.
Ok. Muito obrigado. Bom dia a todos. E também deixamos em Irlanda, como em Portugal, um próspero ano novo. Deixamos na Inglaterra happy. Para nós, mais importante, próspero. E para vocês também. Em primeiro lugar, permitam-me agradecer esta oportunidade de apresentar os objetivos e o plano da 7ª presidência irlandesa do Conselho da União Europeia, que considero como o 40º aniversário da nossa afiliação a esta instituição única e de muito grande valor. Não sendo ainda demasiado tarde, aproveito também a ocasião para lhes desejar, como disse antes, um próspero ano novo, 2003. Peço que me desculpem, mas com vosso permisso, utilizarei o inglês para a parte mais técnica da minha apresentação, com meu colega Denise Hanrahan. So, you will see first the introduction. It simply says, this is our 7th presidency. When I was a young man, I was actually a very young chef de cabinet to our foreign minister in 1975 for the first presidency. And this is our 7th. I have also chaired presidency meetings in New York, in Japan, and in your neighboring country, Spain, where I was ambassador from 2001 to 2005. Obviously, even in the situation we are in now with the new permanent presidency of the European Union, under the excellent, very solid presidency, we think, of Mr. Van Rompuy, the rotating presidency still has a very important role, which we take very seriously. Actually, there are probably more meetings than ever. So you will see on the screen, we have 170 meetings already scheduled in Ireland in a 6-month period. We have, of course, a presidency website and calendar and so on, which you are welcome to consult, obviously, and your staff. I think the most important objective for us, which is, I am sure, something completely shared in Portugal, is promoting economic growth, creating jobs. In our case, during the boom of the Celtic Tiger, we had an unemployment rate of about 3-4%, which effectively in Ireland meant no unemployment. Now it's something like 13%, which is for us far too high. And we are determined to change that for ourselves, but also to do our job as presidency of the European Union, to get the Union concentrating on more employment for people. And I may see here especially young people. We want to improve the competitiveness of the EU. This is an extremely important issue now in relation not only to the traditional friendly, if you like, rivalry with North America, the United States especially, obviously, but also now China and of course Japan, where I also served as ambassador some years ago. So labor costs and ability to deliver are extremely important points for us. The next one says restoring stability. Well, it's only two words, but I guess you know what that means. It means restoring stability in the financial markets, restoring stability inside the European Union, which has gone through a quite, if you like, almost chaotic phase. With this in mind, however, I am reminded of what our finance minister said recently at a conference in Dublin, which I attended, which is, you know, when we look at it day to day, in a kind of bubble of what's happening in the EU at governmental councils and finance ministers' meetings and the official discussions, which are very important in this, in the COREPER and also in the financial committee, we might say, or we might agree with the newspapers and the media that, oh, yet again, they haven't made an agreement, they haven't done something. Actually, I think the finance minister of Ireland thinks, I certainly agree with him very, very much, that when we will look back in 5 or 10 years from now, we will see that we made enormous changes in Europe, in specifically in the Eurozone, in these years from 2008-09, probably to 2015. Approximately. It's a relatively short time in this span of history. It will be about 7 years. But I believe that by the time we get to 2020 or even before that, we will look back and see that. We created a Eurozone with a central bank, but without all the tools which are necessary for controlling that Eurozone, which is what is happening now, moving towards a greater supervision, a banking union, essentially. And during our presidency, I hope very much to see that we will implement the deposit guarantee, as well as banking, what is called banking resolution. It's unquestionable now that the union is going there. President Van Rompuy, President Barroso, João Barroso, your own president of the Commission, the chairman of the president of the parliament, Mr. Schulz, and also very importantly the president of the European Central Bank now, Mr. Draghi, have all had an important effect, I think, in the last maybe 6 months especially. As a result of that, you see the markets responding more favorably to bonds issued by the EU member states. Ireland, we are glad to say yes, but also Portugal. So it's very important for us to be able to move back into the markets by end of this year, in our case, or even before that. And the same for Portugal. We do in Ireland have a very important requirement, reaching an agreement on the MFF, which is to basically lower the cost to us of the funds provided after our banking crisis a couple of years ago. They're too high simply for us to bear, but we do believe we've done a good job. We do believe we've honored our commitments, but we believe very strongly that we need some help from our European partners in relation to this issue at this time. External trade, that's extremely important for all of us in Ireland and in Portugal perhaps especially. In Portugal it's very important to, together with the drop in imports, in order to be able to manage a budget and to reduce the deficit, the target of which was I think 5% set by the Troika last November. I don't know yet what it will be for 2012, but probably going to be more than 5%. Although much will depend on how Portugal and the Troika assess the privatization sale of ANA especially, but also previously the EDP and the Orient. So we have a kind of compact for our presidency, which is growth and jobs, with a priority for youth unemployment. I remember since I came to Portugal hearing the phrase, my assistant will help me, General Arasco? It's a phrase meaning the young people used it as posters. General Arasca, yes. Arasca, it interested me a lot. Sorry for my bad pronunciation in Portuguese. It interested me a lot, but it is a very, very serious point that young people feel that they are a kind of junk generation, not valued, not really able to get jobs, and nobody's interested in them. That's extremely serious, obviously, if you have such a high level of unemployment at youth level, as you do in Portugal, and as they do in Spain, for example. I am also ambassador from Lisbon to Morocco, and I have previously been ambassador to Algeria and to Tunisia, so I'm very interested in the same issue there, the so-called Arab Spring. Although I add this as a side idea, you know, I remember another Arab Spring about 1968, I think, when the West was rather impressed by a young man who came to power in Libya, turning out while he was away, the King Idris, and he was very dynamic and very young at 28, and he was Gaddafi, which didn't turn out so well later. So sometimes my point is making is that it's very good to have younger people moving forward, but younger people are not necessarily the answer to everything. Sorry? Yes, please. Yeah. Sorry, just before that, can you go back to food security? Yeah. Like Portugal, Ireland is still very much an agricultural country. We have changed enormously under the so-called CAP, as you have also. And the issues in the CAP have changed over the years. So food security, for example, not only means supply of food, it means good quality food, it means food that meets health requirements in the EU and outside the EU, and it means security, obviously, also of supply. We want to make sure that food is going to be there for us in the future. So that's still important for us, the CAP, even though we recognize the importance of cohesion funding in promoting jobs and growth. In our case, as we have developed in the EU, we are gradually becoming a net payer, not a net receiver. Portugal, however, would still be a net receiver, and it's very important for you. Growth and job creation, I've mentioned already. The last European Council did adopt the single supervisory mechanism on banking, which is extremely important. And during our presidency, we will push or promote the implementation of that. It's very important to maintain the integrity of the single market. And it's very important to ensure that there are arrangements in place for proper democratic oversight and accountability. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, this is where you come in your parliament, especially in this Committee for European Affairs. this is not simply a matter that this should be left to the European Parliament in Brussels or Luxembourg. It's something that has to be right at the heart of discussion in national parliaments also, including obviously here in Portugal. We will seek to advance technology, the so-called digital economy, by making progress on issues spanning a number of council configurations, including intellectual property rights, cybersecurity, identification, data protection, and high-speed broadband rollout. Frankly, I think in Portugal you may be a bit in advance of us in Ireland and Britain in relation to identity cards. There is still a strong resistance in our countries to what is seen as government, if you like, intrusion in private lives. Although these days you will find young people who want to get into a club at night or into a bar or something, producing some kind of card to prove that they are over a certain age, 18 or 21, like in the United States. So it's moving definitely in that direction. A major change, obviously, which affects incoming presidencies now, is the foreign policy role of the European Union. That used to belong to the presidency of the day, working perhaps with the previous presidency and the future presidency as well, of course, with the Commission. But now it belongs to the new European External Action Service. And it's, from our point of view, here in Lisbon, we will be working very closely with my good colleague Luis Sao Pessoa in the European delegation, and throughout the system with the High Representative Lady Ashton and the European Action Service generally, to promote effectiveness and coherence in the EU's response to current foreign policy and security challenges. We probably don't realize, or maybe you in Parliament don't realize, how relatively small the External Action Service is still. It is small, and it needs to grow. But while it is small, it's quite important that the presidency of the day, the rotating presidency, works very closely to fill gaps in the EU system as we know it. As for events that are happening, I remember one minister being asked at a conference in Dublin recently, how are you going to react to some completely unexpected event? And his answer was, well, when I was a small boy, I expected an unexpected event by hiding under the stairs. And since then, I haven't developed any better strategy. Of course, it got bad publicity in the newspapers, but of course you prepare for the unexpected by trying to have resources available, and maybe also by thinking of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things that could happen in your mind. But the important thing, of course, is to concentrate on the things that you know are going to happen. And one of them is the ongoing crisis in Syria, which is still defeating us. Another is obviously the permanent tension between Israel and Palestine that always has been a feature, even in my first presidency with our minister in 1975, Israel-Palestine was a huge issue at that time. And of course, it still is. Promoting greater coherence of EU external policies, including with our membership of the Human Rights Council and in other multilateral fora, will be an important objective for us. I remember very well being in UN New York in 1981, seeking membership for Ireland of the Security Council. And I think I can say that my greatest friend was Portugal. Portugal had been the member in the 2 years previously. And I don't think, without Portugal, we would not have been able to persuade countries such as Angola, Mozambique, I think Brazil may have done something different, but anyway, Angola, Mozambique, Sao Tome, Príncipe, Cabo Verde, and so on, to vote for us. But I mention that because there is a similarity between Portugal and Ireland. We both have big neighbors, obviously. We're relatively small. You are bigger than us in population, but relatively small. But the third thing is that we have very, very big connections overseas. In our case, principally in North America and in Australia, New Zealand, but also to some extent in Latin America. You know, there is still a very strong Irish community, for example, in Argentina. And the liberator Bernardo O'Higgins was obviously Irish. You, on the other hand, have extraordinary openings in Africa, South Africa, in Latin America, especially but not only in Brazil, in Asia, in China, obviously. And I think it's no accident that the privatization of the EDP and the Orien electricity and gas grid companies have been done with the assistance of the Chinese. And yesterday I heard the president speak in his address to diplomats at New Year very strongly about the importance of Asia to Portugal at the present time, and I'm very aware from speaking to Foreign Minister Portas what emphasis Portugal places on that. I must say it gives me a lot of satisfaction to be here and to see Portugal refocusing again on the outside world, not neglecting the EU, of course. In fact, if I may say so, or if any of you would like to accept an invitation, when I invite Portuguese to a dinner or a lunch outside my own house, I bring them to one of two restaurants. One is called Portugalia, and the other is called No Solo Italia. But the important thing is that they are both beside the Monumento dos Descobrimentos, the Estatua de Enrique Navegador. And it's only maybe when you're quite close to that, and you Portuguese don't really notice it because you see it every day, but if you're a foreigner, you notice it, you know. This amazing staircase on the side of the prow of the ship. You see all these men, I think they are all men, walking up onto the ship. This is the 15th century. Do they know where they are going? No. Do they know what's going to happen? No. Are they going to drown? Maybe. When they get somewhere, will they be killed? Possibly. Will they get riches? Maybe, and so on. But this is, I like to show Portuguese as the Portugal optimista, and not the Portugal pessimista that we hear about too much nowadays. Anyway, that's the foreign policy. We will be supporting the mandate of the new special representative on human rights, Mr. Lambrindis. We have been elected, with your help again, to the Human Rights Council. This is something very close to my own heart because previously I was our human rights representative for 6 years in New York and Geneva, and previously chairman of the Third Committee of the General Assembly of the United Nations in New York. We will support the mandate of Mr. Lambrindis, obviously. Lastly, as you know, I mean, Ireland regards itself as a neutral country. We stayed neutral in the last war. Personally, I have always been fascinated by how Mr. Salazar kept Portugal neutral in the last war. Whatever you think about Salazar, it was an amazing achievement in foreign policy. And indeed, your ambassador in Dublin, Bernardo Fuchur Pereira, has recently written a book on that. And you have in Dublin the son of a former ambassador who is a professor at one of our universities, de Menezes, who has also written a long book about that. It's a very interesting topic in Portuguese foreign policy history. For us, in disarmament, because we're neutral, we've always taken a very keen role for since the end of the Second World War on all disarmament issues at the United Nations and elsewhere, including now in NATO. Although we're not a member of NATO, we're a member of the WEU, and we have some connection, at least, with NATO, not at all so much as Portugal, but we're there. Trade. Well, trade is extraordinarily important to you if you are in Portugal, if you're going to get through a recession. You're going to have to sell your way through it, basically. And we are doing the same. I know that the external trade of Portugal has risen a lot in the last year or two. It's risen a great deal in Ireland also. And we are even more vulnerable than you to trade issues. I mean, Irish GDP is about 80% dependent on trade. Typically, let's say a country like France or Germany would be something like 40% dependent on trade. But in Ireland, it's more like 80%, or some people even say higher. So we are very vulnerable in an economic downturn in the world, but we also can rebound very quickly when there is an upturn. So, for example, what is happening now in the United States with an improved economy is very important for us, and it's very important for you too. We will have a meeting of trade ministers in Ireland, which will focus especially on the European Union, USA trade relationship. As you know, that relationship can be thorny at times, as the U.S. Investigate or complain about our trading practices. Well, so do we in the Commission in relation to what companies, for example, like Microsoft or Google are doing. As you may know, we have a very large multinational investment element in Ireland. In fact, I've just recently been to Google in Dublin, which has 3,000 employees, which is about 10% of the total Google workforce throughout the world. They also have places in England, they have places in France, and of course in Singapore, as well as in the United States. But with Google in Dublin, we also have companies like Facebook, Microsoft, Intel, and so on. So Ireland is a kind of a high-tech hub in Europe for many American, not only American, but many American companies. And that's extremely important to us. And since we have that experience, I think that we will play a good role in helping to improve the EU-US trade relationship. We will also try to advance free trade negotiations with key partners. These obviously include China. They include Japan, where I was ambassador myself. They include Canada, and they include the important countries of Latin America, notably Brazil. And they also include India, where I also served, but for a short period. Enlargement is actually an issue that remains very much for the rotating presidency. There was a lot of progress under the Cypriot presidency in relation to Croatia, and we would expect to see Croatia fully ready to join the European Union on 1 July 2013. As a former ambassador to Poland and traveling around that area, I know Croatia actually quite well, and I would like them to join on 30 June 2013, so I can be there here in Lisbon to welcome them. We hope to open all or almost all the remaining chapters with Iceland. Iceland is a country quite dear to us. Of course, it's to the north and far away and so on. But there are historical connections between Iceland and Ireland. And we look forward to welcoming them in the EU. I think that in our case, Iceland might be pushing for the EU now because of their experiences in the financial crisis a few years ago, from which they have recovered amazingly well and are an interesting, I won't say best example, but an interesting example to everyone. But it's a natural step for Iceland, I think, to join the EU. So if we can conclude negotiations with Iceland, that would be, I think, a major achievement of our presidency. Ireland as a country is supportive of Turkey. And personally, I have been supporting Turkish candidacy since 1962, when I was 13 years old. And since then, and I've traveled quite a lot in Turkey. And personally, I do think that it's more and more obvious that having Turkey within the United, within the European Union is important for our wider relationships with the Arab world, but more especially with the Muslim world. Turkey is historically a bridge, sometimes a bridge too far into the Balkans and towards Vienna, but it's a bridge. And I'm aware that in Portugal you have a similarly sympathetic attitude to Turkey. So we would hope to move the process forward. I just spoke to the Turkish ambassador here yesterday. And well, if we can open a chapter during our presidency, I think we would regard that as a major step forward. So let's see. We will work with the Commission in developing the aspirations of the Balkan states wishing to attain EU membership. Obviously, work has already been done with Serbia and Montenegro, which are also places I know personally rather well. I know people there. I think the Serbian foreign minister will be in Ireland this month already. So it would be important for us to develop the Balkan relationship with the EU during our presidency. Neighborhood policy. Well, it depends where you are, doesn't it? When I was ambassador in Poland, I was told by people, what is your neighborhood policy? And they meant, of course, policy towards Belarus, especially Ukraine, which Poland was very strongly supportive of. And when I was previously in Spain and now in Portugal, neighborhood policy meant Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, and so forth. And both the north and the south are a little bit sort of fighting each other about that. Yes, I think it's important. I sometimes feel that we don't recognize how far we have gone. You know, there has been an amazing development with Morocco, for example, since the association agreement of 2000, which is the most intensive agreement we have. And as ambassador to Morocco from Lisbon, when I go there, I am always reminded of that. We have to encourage partners who wish to have a closer relationship with the EU. We have to offer them incentives to do so, and at the same time, strengthen their own domestic values and norms. So what we have been doing in Morocco in relation to democratization, I think has been quite skillful and important in Morocco. And I don't think it's an accident that Morocco has not been disturbed as much as other countries by the so-called Arab Spring. which you saw in Tunisia, and especially, obviously, in Libya and in Egypt. The Irish have, for a very long time, a very strong, how would you say, humanitarian spirit. We have a development cooperation program, which is quite close compared to most countries to the EU target of 0.7% of GDP. I think it's currently about, for us, 0.5% or somewhat more than that. Anyway, in terms of actual money, it's somewhere between 500 and 600 million euro, but half a billion approximately, which for a small country with a population of about 4.5 million is a lot. In Portugal, for example, and all of that comes from the taxpayer. In Portugal, by contrast, your development aid is maybe less than 100 million from the taxpayer, but you do distribute development aid with funds from and to Portuguese territories where you're very experienced, obviously, from the World Bank and other international funds. We look forward, obviously, to working closely with the European Parliament, all 700 members, and we hope to deliver results with the help of the Parliament for all the citizens of the European Union in the 6 months ahead. As you see, the end here is Gaurav Mahagav, which means in the Irish language, thank you all. But if I may say so in Portuguese, para terminar, agradeço a vossa atenção e convite estou à disposição para responder a qualquer questão que considerem pertinente esclarecer. Naturalmente, 2003 não vai ser um ano simples para Portugal, para a Irlanda ou para a nossa União Europeia. Mas estou confiante que, trabalhando em conjunto, os nossos países, os nossos povos e parlamentos irão alcançar o progresso definitivo preconizado pelo lema da presidência irlandesa, que é estabilidade, crescimento e emprego. Obrigado.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. Bom, muito obrigada pela sua explicação. Eu queria dizer que o Sr. Embaixador tem um constrangimento de tempo e a minha sugestão hoje era que fizéssemos uma primeira ronda de perguntas a que o Sr. Embaixador responderia e depois uma segunda ronda de perguntas, se houver lugar a isso. De qualquer forma, das inscrições todas que tenho, dava desde já a palavra ao Sr. Deputado Vitalino Canas, do Partido Socialista, e pedia que os Srs. Deputados se inscrevessem para depois podermos trocar impressões consigo.
Sr. Presidente, muito, muito obrigado, Sr. Embaixador, caros colegas. Eu irei ser muito breve, tendo em conta o tempo do Sr. Embaixador, e se calhar até sugeria fazer aqui apenas muito breves três ou quatro muito breves comentários e depois passar a palavra ao Sr. Deputado Pedro Silva Pereira, que fará ele sim questões, e para evitar até eventualmente uma segunda ronda. Os comentários, em primeiro lugar, é saudação ao Sr. Embaixador. É muito importante que a União Europeia tenha a presidência da Irlanda nesta altura, um país muito experiente na União Europeia e com capacidade também de liderança. Aliás, essa capacidade de liderança nota-se logo neste PowerPoint. Eu notei que nem no PowerPoint, nem na intervenção do Sr. Embaixador se falou alguma vez de austeridade. Falou-se de desenvolvimento, de crescimento, de criação de emprego e de outras políticas, mas nunca houve aqui o tópico da austeridade, que é um elemento importante. Eu acho que todos os documentos, porventura todos os documentos da União Europeia dos últimos dois anos, do último ano, dois anos, se calhar até mais, têm sempre qualquer coisa a ver com a austeridade. Aquilo que o Sr. Embaixador nos trouxe é um programa diferente e espero que o Governo português olhe bem para este programa. Queria aqui também referir que muitas vezes, e este é um elogio, muitas vezes na política interna portuguesa se procura comparação entre Portugal e Irlanda e às vezes se diz que não queremos comparar-nos com a Grécia, mas sim com a Irlanda. Isto é um elogio implícito, naturalmente, à Irlanda. É talvez, às vezes, um discurso pouco solidário com a Grécia, que eu não acompanho, mas em todo caso queria aqui realçar a ideia de que a Irlanda está a fazer bem o seu caminho e que serve de referência, naturalmente, para Portugal. Queria aqui também sublinhar, uma vez que há talvez aí uma pequena divergência de prioridades entre Portugal e Irlanda, mas queria sublinhar a importância que conferimos às políticas de coesão e às verbas para a coesão no novo quadro financeiro plurianual. Pedia que a presidência irlandesa se dedicasse também a esse tópico, que é muitíssimo importante para os países da coesão. E, finalmente, queria aqui referir que, tal como a Irlanda, Portugal também pretende regressar aos mercados no final de 2013, porventura a Irlanda terá melhores condições para o fazer, mas há uma questão que se coloca aqui, que é saber se os prazos, designadamente para os cumprimentos do programa, dos programas que têm o caso, são prazos atualmente ajustados. Creio que é uma pergunta que Portugal tem feito e que a Irlanda certamente também estará a fazer neste momento. Estes eram os comentários, teria muitas outras questões, mas também terei de me ausentar e, portanto, pediria que a Sra. Presidente me deixasse passar a palavra ao Sr. Deputado Pedro Silva Pereira para complementar com perguntas a minha intervenção.
Sr. Deputado Silva Pereira.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Sr. Embaixador, também queria cumprimentá-lo. Serei também breve. Queria saudar o programa da presidência irlandesa e, em particular, o enfoque que dá ao tema do crescimento e do emprego. Isso significa uma pretensão de alteração, de alguma forma, do equilíbrio ou do desequilíbrio das prioridades políticas a nível europeu, que nos parece muito importante nesta altura. Mas queria, sobretudo, perguntar ao Sr. Embaixador se a circunstância de a Irlanda estar agora na presidência da União Europeia, se isso vai dificultar, inibir a atitude que a Irlanda tem tido no sentido de procurar melhorar as condições do seu programa de ajustamento. Porque a Irlanda tem tido uma atitude política de reivindicação e até de coragem política em relação à União Europeia quanto aos termos do seu programa. E nós vimos, ainda recentemente, na apresentação do programa da presidência, quando a Comissão Europeia visitou Dublin, que o primeiro-ministro irlandês, em público, dirigindo-se à Comissão Europeia, disse que era necessário alterar as condições da dívida irlandesa, do empréstimo contraído para apoiar o sistema financeiro, quer nos prazos de pagamentos, quer na questão dos juros, foram, na altura, contratados. O que pareceu ser o sinal de que a Irlanda não via, nem mesmo pelo facto de estar na presidência, nenhuma inibição a lutar por melhores condições. Isso seria muito importante, porque é também uma lição que podemos tirar para a experiência portuguesa. A Irlanda hoje, no seu programa, tem o objetivo de redução do déficit para 5% do PIB em 2014. Ora, a meta dos 5% do PIB para Portugal foi acordada, já depois de revista com a União Europeia, para 2012, 2 anos antes. É claro que a situação de partida não era igual, mas a verdade é que em 2011 a Irlanda teve um déficit de 9,1. E para o próximo ano de 2013 tem que baixar esse déficit de 9,1 em 2011 para 7,5 em 2013. Ora, Portugal no próximo ano tem que baixar não para 7,5, mas para 5. E depois, em 2014, Portugal pretende baixar, de acordo com o acordado com a Troika, o seu déficit para 2,5, enquanto que a Irlanda em 2014 baixará para 5. E, portanto, nós temos uma grande diferença nas metas. Só para dar esta nota, até ao ano de 2013, Portugal vai ter que baixar o seu déficit, do déficit real de 7,5 para 4,5, são 3% de 3 pontos percentuais de ajustamento, enquanto que a Irlanda vai fazer um ajustamento de 1,6. Se acrescentarmos o ano seguinte, em que nós baixamos para 2,5 e a Irlanda para 5, é todo o ajustamento, na Irlanda passa para 4,1, mas em Portugal vai nos 5. Ou seja, o esforço de a atitude política que a Irlanda tem tido na negociação com a União Europeia tem compensado. Isto é, tem-lhe permitido ir alterando as metas da redução do déficit orçamental de uma forma mais ajustada à realidade. E o Presidente da Comissão Europeia, em Dublin, respondendo ao Primeiro-Ministro da Irlanda, quando ele disse que era necessário rever as condições do empréstimo, deu um sinal positivo de que a União Europeia poderia considerar essa pretensão da Irlanda. De forma que a minha pergunta é simples, é saber se a presidência da Irlanda é para a Irlanda um fator de inibição na defesa dos seus interesses enquanto país sob ajustamento, ou se, pelo contrário, acha que estes sinais que o Primeiro-Ministro da Irlanda deu são um sinal de que a Irlanda continuará firme na defesa de melhores condições para o seu programa de ajustamento. E, em segundo lugar, se os sinais que a Comissão Europeia terá dado de sentido positivo são para a Irlanda, neste momento, um sinal de esperança de que as condições contratadas para a dívida irlandesa poderão sofrer uma revisão nos próximos meses, de modo a favorecer todo o ajustamento da Irlanda e também as condições de seu regresso aos mercados. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado Silva Pereira. Passava agora a palavra ao Sr. Deputado Costa Neves, do Partido Social Democrata.
Obrigado, Sra. Presidente, Srs. Senhores Deputados, Sr. Embaixador. Queria também começar por lhe desejar um próspero ano novo e as maiores felicidades no exercício desta presidência. Uma presidência que vem para nós no que consideramos o tempo certo, isto para manifestar a nossa satisfação pelo facto de, neste primeiro semestre de 2013, em que tantas coisas se podem passar na União Europeia, a presidência estar entregue à Irlanda. Tive a oportunidade de acompanhar outras presidências da Irlanda e são normalmente muito eficazes e, portanto, dar conta também da nossa satisfação deste acaso de calendário. Falou o Sr. Embaixador e eu queria sublinhar este aspecto porque falou de forma muito objetiva em growth and jobs, youth and employment. Ora, é exatamente isso que nos preocupa, growth and jobs, youth and employment. E, portanto, não podemos apoiar mais estas prioridades. Gostaria de referir que, estando Portugal como a Irlanda num quadro de um programa de assistência financeira, toda a questão da negociação do quadro financeiro plurianual tem para nós uma grande importância. Ou seja, quando os meios financeiros em Portugal são mais escassos, é óbvio que o apoio a políticas, nomeadamente a iniciativas empresariais, que possam lançar o crescimento e o emprego, tem muito a ver com os fundos que nos possam chegar da União Europeia. Damos uma grande prioridade aos fundos para a realização da política de coesão e, dentro desta política de coesão, obviamente pensamos que os Estados-membros que devem ser mais fortemente considerados são exatamente aqueles que são menos desenvolvidos e para as regiões mais pobres desses Estados menos desenvolvidos. Digo isto porque nesta discussão, às vezes pouco solidária, entre os contribuintes líquidos e os beneficiários, tenta-se equilibrar as coisas, fazendo com que parte significativa das verbas do orçamento vão para políticas que não têm a ver com a coesão, e, portanto, prejudicam este objetivo. Desejamos também, portanto, muito sucesso na negociação deste quadro financeiro e que eu possa terminar a muito breve prazo, ou seja, que neste trimestre, se possível em fevereiro, se dê o acordo para este fim. Queria, para terminar, dizer que nestas questões de prioridades para o quadro financeiro parece haver um grande consenso em Portugal e, nomeadamente, neste Parlamento, embora, enquanto ouvia o meu colega deputado Silva Pereira, não pudesse ter deixado de pensar que é verdade que os ritmos para a realização do déficit são diferentes em Portugal e na Irlanda, mas não posso deixar de invejar os níveis de dívida pública irlandesa, que são bem mais baixos que nós. E um déficit com uma dívida pública baixa é uma coisa, um déficit com uma dívida pública elevada é outra, mas isso é para a nossa discussão interna. Muito obrigado, Sr. Embaixador.
Bom, Srs. Deputados, passo agora a palavra ao último inscrito, Sr. Deputado Serpa Oliva, do CDS-PP.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente, Srs. Deputados, Sr. Embaixador. Só muito rapidamente, devido ao adiantado da hora, saudá-lo em nome do CDS e obviamente também agradecer a distribuição da documentação que nos fez chegar, desejar as maiores felicidades à presidência irlandesa. Estamos num momento particularmente difícil da Europa, Vossa Excelência saberá tão bem ou melhor que nós, e portanto desejo-lhe as maiores felicidades e à presidência irlandesa. E se a Senhora Presidente me permitir, passarei a palavra ao meu colega Rui Barreto para duas questões que lhe quero colocar. Muito obrigado, Sr. Embaixador.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Também quero, naturalmente, cumprimentar o Sr. Embaixador da Irlanda em Portugal e, em nome do CDS, também desejar à presidência irlandesa bons frutos e, de uma forma, com certeza, desinibida, construir uma Europa mais solidária para todos. Bem, sabemos que os tempos em que vivemos são de enorme dificuldade, de enormes desafios para a Europa. E temos um longo caminho para superarmos em conjunto e com sucesso, recebendo os contributos e, naturalmente, o contributo da presidência irlandesa para este importante desafio que deve ser superado. Para que esta crise seja superada, todos temos ideias em relação a aspectos concretos que podem contribuir para superar a crise, mas, acima de tudo, o que me parece fundamental é que haja vontade política para chegar a um entendimento entre os Estados-membros. E são, essencialmente, esses votos que eu faço à presidência irlandesa para que possa encontrar, juntamente com todos os Estados, essa vontade política para superar, de uma vez por todas, esta crise. Gostaria, por isso, mais uma vez, desejar as maiores felicidades neste caminho. Em relação ao programa e às prioridades da presidência irlandesa, este mostra, desde logo, um entendimento claro da situação em que vivemos, o que é prioritário e o que é secundário, pretendendo assegurar a estabilidade, fomentar o crescimento económico, mas também promover o emprego no continente europeu. E assim as duas questões que gostaria de colocar. A primeira tem a ver com a concretização e a finalização do próximo quadro comunitário de apoio. É muito importante que assim o concretizemos. Estivemos atentos às conclusões do penúltimo Conselho Europeu, em que ele manifestou exatamente um sentido de finalizar as negociações o mais rapidamente possível e esperemos que assim aconteça. É uma tarefa difícil, mas para nós seria muito bom que isso acontecesse, até para que não houvesse atrasos na entrada em vigor desse novo quadro comunitário 2014-2020. Gostaria de colocar, então, ao Sr. Embaixador, que contributos concretos visam a presidência irlandesa para as negociações que se avizinham do próximo quadro. A segunda questão que quero lhe colocar tem a ver com um aspecto que gostaria de partilhar com o Sr. Embaixador, da nossa total concordância e apoio relativamente ao ênfase dado pelo vosso programa às gerações futuras e ao combate ao flagelo do desemprego jovem. Esta é uma questão central e importante. O maior e mais urgente problema que a Europa enfrenta neste momento é o desemprego, em particular junto dos jovens. Um pouco por toda a Europa, 20% dos nossos jovens não conseguem trabalho. Temos de enfrentar este problema urgentemente. E nesse sentido gostaria de saber o que é que a presidência irlandesa planeia fazer para proteger a juventude dos efeitos da crise, sobretudo o fluxo da imigração. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. Sr. Deputado António Rodrigues, inscreve-se para uma breve intervenção do Partido Social Democrata.
Muito obrigado, Sra. Presidente. Com a benevolência, da Sra. Presidente, Sr. Embaixador, uma honra tê-lo aqui, particularmente nestas circunstâncias da apresentação do programa da Presidência Irlandesa. É um comentário, não é uma pergunta, é um comentário à sua apresentação, um apelo e um desejo. O comentário é, obviamente, agradecer-lhe o programa da forma clara como o conseguiu apresentar. É importante termos um guião relativamente àquilo que são as atividades da Presidência para termos a noção daquilo que nos espera nos próximos 6 meses. E, como disse o meu colega Carlos Costa Neves, é uma Presidência muito importante. Tem desafios extraordinários pela frente. E a Irlanda tem, neste momento, o know-how de ser um país sob assistência técnica e financeira. A Europa não se divide entre o Norte e o Sul. Neste momento, dividir-se-á entre os países que têm maiores dificuldades e os países que têm menos dificuldades. E, por isso, um país que tem algumas dificuldades, mesmo que de natureza diferente das portuguesas, é muito importante que tenha a Presidência, porque as compreende, porque as viveu e porque pode, em função disso, trabalhar em conjunto. Não é se ela se sente inibida ou se ela se sente de alguma forma afetada, é porque tem a experiência suficiente para trabalhar em conjunto para todos os Estados-membros. E esse era o primeiro comentário que gostaria de lhe fazer. O apelo é que a Irlanda não faça como outros Estados-membros têm feito na Presidência, que é meramente preocupar-se em fechar dossiês, que é meramente fazer aquilo que os outros não conseguiram fazer. Isso pode ser importante, mas não é esse o desafio europeu. O desafio europeu é conseguir construir em conjunto uma vontade coletiva em termos de futuro comum que todos nós temos. E por isso estamos todos na União Europeia, por isso é que dizemos que queremos trabalhar numa base de uma União Económica e Monetária, mas também que queremos colaborar para uma União Política. A última questão é, Sr. Embaixador, não lhe ofereço um trevo de 4 folhas, porque julgo que não precisa, nem lhe desejo sorte, porque acho que a Irlanda é um país cheio de sorte, como nós somos e queremos ser um país cheio de sorte por ter a Irlanda na Presidência. A única coisa que é importante é que daqui a 6 meses o Sr. Embaixador possa estar aqui connosco a dizer nós cumprimos, e que cumprindo a Irlanda, cumpriu-se a Europa. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. Antes de passar a palavra ao Sr. Embaixador para terminarmos esta audiência, queria apenas pedir desculpa aos nossos colegas da Comissão de Negócios Estrangeiros, que estão neste momento a querer entrar para uma reunião, e por isso passo de imediato a palavra ao Sr. Embaixador para responder a estas questões que foram colocadas.
Posso falar em inglês?
Yes, you okay. Can.
Thank you. I understand quite well in Portuguese, but speaking is more difficult for me, so I'll speak in English. Thank you for not asking me any very awkward questions, first of all.
We're diplomats.
Yes, you are diplomats, maybe more diplomats than me. When I have a new person in my office, like Denise, first thing I say is, what is diplomacy? And of course, very often people will say diplomacy is being nice, diplomacy is being tactful. Diplomacy is never getting into any trouble. And I say, no. Diplomacy is getting what you want, you know, for your country. The only thing you have to remember is that, like if you are handling elephants, even when they're making love, elephants are difficult. So you need to proceed always with care. That is diplomacy. We have a lot of things in common, obviously, and I think that Portugal will be happy that Ireland is in the presidency, just as you would be happy, we would be happy if you are in the presidency. We have many interests in common. Our financial issues are different, there's no question about that. But what we need from the European Union is the same, and I don't think I've ever been in a country where our objectives and the objectives of the country, in this case Portugal, really have been so similar, and not just in the European Union, but outside that world, in the United Nations and in the wider world, let's say. And personally, I am very, very interested in how Portugal is progressing, so to speak, it's past, if I may put it like that, in Africa and Latin America, and also in North Africa and the Gulf States, which is a particular objective of Foreign Minister Portash, which I admire. We are similar. In the course of the presidency, if any of you want to contact me about something that you feel is a problem, please do. I mean, we're at your disposal, and I can assure you I will take anything that you say very seriously, as also anything that the Portuguese government may have to say to me about what will happen next. And I will try very hard, to the best of my ability and our ability in the embassy, with Denise also, to answer whatever concerns you may have. My colleague reminds me that, of course, we still have Troika programs. You have one next month. The Troika will be back. And we have yet to see what has been the result of the program for last year. For example, the deficit, is it going to be 5%? I think a lot depends on really how the accounts are made in relation to the privatization sales, of, as I said earlier, of ANA and EDP and ORAN. That will be important. But I think it's, you know, we shouldn't get too hung up on what the target is, 5%. I think so long as we're progressing in the right direction, that is the important thing for Europe, and it's the important thing for the Troika. You have made changes in labor law. I think, speaking personally now, not as presidency, that you need to make some more changes in property law, and I don't think actually that everybody in Portugal understands the relationship between labor and property. In other words, if you have very small salaries, you can't pay very high rents. And if you pay very low rents, then the landlord, the owner, does not have the means to maintain the property. And as a result, there is a deterioration of the property stock. I can see myself in Lisbon. I think the another Troika issue, the more speedy process through the judiciary is very important. The Prime Minister told me recently that you have established a small claims court. I think that will be very important, because so many of the issues that come before the courts are really very small, for €30 on a phone bill or a credit card or something like that, and it's clogging up the courts. So the system is too slow. We recognized that in Ireland quite a while ago, and we increased greatly the number of judges, and we also established small claims courts, which have greatly improved the system. So I was very pleased with what the Prime Minister told me. You obviously, one big difference, if I may say so, to finish, between Ireland and Portugal is that in Ireland we have a highly centralized government. I mean, local authorities, the managers of local authorities are actually appointed directly by the government. And local politicians are not especially important. They're elected for ceremonial purposes, and they have a role, for example, in planning and so on. But, you know, you have in Portugal, for a country of 10 million people, 18 districts, autonomias, in also in Azores and Madeira. And I understand that from the Prime Minister that you're proposing to abolish 1,000 freguesias, which is 25% of the total. And this is a very interesting thing. You know, when I go around Portugal and I go to very small places, I realize the importance that people attach to their local school, to their local hospital, to their local concerns. It's extremely important, but it's also important for efficiency, and also for good government and transparency in government, that you know where the money is going. I mean, people perhaps didn't know where the money was going in Madeira. Well, they know now, after the last few years. And that's a major change also in Portugal, which I see coming anyway, but partly because of the Troika. And if anybody wants to talk to me about this more afterwards, I'll be very I'd be very happy. But once again, thank you. Thank you for attention, and I do mean it sincerely. If any of you or any of your colleagues want to say something to me or to my colleague in the embassy, we will be all ears for you for the next 6 months. Also, we will be inviting you to various events, including one this Friday, which is the launch of the presidency. It's not going to be a spectacular orchestra. It's going to be two fabulous ladies who are major singers now, really well recognized in the United States, and they're flying in especially from New York to Lisbon on Friday at the Palacio Foch to sing just for you. Thank you.
Muito obrigada, Sr. Embaixador, por esta audição e desejo-lhe os maiores sucessos para a presidência da Irlanda na União Europeia. Senhores deputados da Comissão de Assuntos Europeus, a nossa reunião continua na sala 9, terceiro piso. Muito obrigada. Obrigada, senhor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I didn't go too long. A little bit too long. Hello.